A feathery warning brushed the back of Christy's skull. She halted, Doc and Burnson just behind her, ducking in the jagged crack they were using to creep up on the Las Vegas Convention Center. Her hand stayed tight around her 38 as she scanned the uneven terrain for any sign of Jack or whatever had tripped her psychic alert. Jack had been less than 20 yards in front of them, but he disappeared as quick and traceless as morning mist getting hit by full sunlight. 30 yards away squatted the wreckage of the convention center. The thing that made the convention center attractive was its proximity to the eastern wall surrounding the sunken center of the ville. She had already spotted the men making the rounds on top of the wall, armed with weapons. Freezing into position, knowing sudden movement caught a person's peripheral vision faster than anything, Christy waited, barely breathing. She saw the set guard only a few heartbeats later, then he was gone, and the feathery touch inside her head disappeared with him. She surveyed the grounds in front of their position again. Three empty wags in good repair were parked near the entranceway to the convention center. Looking back over her shoulder, she waved on Doc and Burnson. Just as Christy reached the first wag, Jack rose up out of the darkness. Christy turned the 38 on him before she realized who it was.
Just me. Was inside for a bit.
What's it look like in there?
Empty. Most of the sec watching the pit.
Is there a way to get to the top?
Yeah. Way to get to top. Way underneath, too.
Underneath?
Yeah. Please to park wags. Lots of dead wags already there.
We'll take a look. See what we have to work with. Let's check the wags out here first.
They split up. Doc and Burnson went through one of them while Christy and Jack took the other two. All of them held ammo and assault rifles, supplies, and spare jerry cans of fuel.
Christy.
She crossed over to him. When Jack opened a toolbox, she saw small, grease-paper-wrapped blocks placed neatly inside.
Plastex. Got detonators, too. Some timers, some distance. Batteries look okay.
Help me put this stuff into the bags. Ryan and the others are going to need a back door. With this, I think we can make it.
Ryan took up a position behind an overturned truck nearly 100 yards from the Mirage. The building was incredible. Small falls, probably less impressive than they were before the new cost had claimed the bill, jetted from the fifth floor, pouring into cracked basins that held some kind of return system that was only partially working. Lit by sporadic underwater neon lights, the white frothing overflow leaked out into the pit. It had taken the group long minutes to cover the distance. In that time, they'd had three encounters and had lost Klingdon to a slimy tentacle creature that had been wrapped up on a spit of land trailing from a broad pond on the east side of Las Vegas Boulevard. Fielding had died during an ambush by members of the blue team, coming up from behind and to the side. The companions had dropped three enemy gunners before they'd managed an escape.
How do you want to handle this?
Ryan mopped sweat from his brow and looked back over his ragtag army. Mildred, like JB, was calm and collected. But the three remaining men appeared shaken, on the verge of spooking at every sound around them.
Front door looks inviting, but there are already some takers on it.
Missed them. Damn, they must be good.
Lots of other entertainment going on. Missing them is understandable. They are good.
How good?
Good enough that I've only managed to lock into their shadows a couple times.
What's your color?
Green, maybe. They've made themselves hard to see.
They're green. They got no casualties that I've noticed.
Ryan nodded. The armorer had been the first to notice the different colored lenses used by the Sekmen on top of the wall. When they left the dead Thompson twin behind, a harsh, bright light had shone onto the area a few minutes later, splashing the corpse. Shortly after that, JB had pointed out the Sekmen waving the flash with the red lens, aiming the beam back at the big window in Bally's, where the Barons watched the game. JB had been keeping count automatically. By his reckoning, the purple team had taken the most damage, with seven people gone. With four of their teammates dead, Ryan's red team was running a close second in casualties. Ryan squinted at the Mirage.
Well, maybe they're better than I was thinking. They're boys.
Boys?
From the looks of them. Saw some faces that time. Young. Maybe early 20s, but I'm putting my jack on them being teens. No older.
What are boys doing out here? The blue team had some young among them, but they were all men.
I don't know, but they move like a unit. Solid. Working point, wings, and slack. Everybody keeping covering fire over everybody else.
Just like Trader set up his operations. One of his commandments on Warwag 1, thou shalt cover thy neighbor's ass.
I don't see them as volunteers. Unless they got some kind of special arrangement that's going to get them out of here.
We were promised. Maybe they got promised too and believed it.
Stupid if they did. But they're young. Maybe they just don't know any better.
Two reasons that group went into the Mirage. One, they're hunting the high ground like us. Maybe gonna take a chance at that wall if they can. Two, they've got something waiting for them that their Baron set up.
There's only one way to find out.
Yeah. We go in from the side. Second floor. We've already seen some of these buildings are booby-trapped. That one's an obvious choice.
What about those boys?
They get in our face and raise their weapons. Blow them away. No other way about it. Them or us. Me? I'd prefer it be us. Ryan stepped into the nearby shadows and moved toward the building. Dean was wet from the short run through the cascading fall spraying down from the fifth floor of the Mirage. He ran a hand through his soaked hair to get it out of his eyes. Connor still walked point, a rifle cradled in his arms. The boy craned his head, staring. Dean knew it wasn't safe to be gawking, but he didn't blame the other boy for it either. After walking through the entranceway, they were confronted by a jungle that had evidently overgrown its boundaries in the decades since the Skydark. Paths twisted in different directions between the trees and foliage. Some of them were just ruts made by small animals, able to get under the lower branches of the trees. Others, though, were man-made, tall and cleared out. The ground pounded bare of grass in patches. A few of the trails had been tramped down recently. Dean spotted the machete marks on the tree trunks and saw the amputated branches that still showed meat in places. The trees themselves weren't indigenous to the area. The ceiling was 80 or 90 feet overhead. It was hard to see through the darkness. Lewis glanced down the troop.
Tighten it up. Connor, cut your lead to about 10 yards and hold up at the corners. That way we can back you up if you need it.
Right.
A few yards farther on, they came in sight of the front desk. Dean had stayed in motels before, from honest-run little places operated by a family to bigger establishments that held rumors in the second or third floor over the stage areas where gaudy sluts pandered their wares. He'd never seen a front desk as big as the one he gazed at. Lazy tendrils from dozens of plants crawled across the pitted surface of the desk. Behind it, track lighting with subdued illumination played over the huge glass front of an aquarium. Dean was certain it measured over 50 feet. He shivered as he stared into the cold, menacing eye of a small fish that coasted against the glass wall. Whether it was physically possible or not, he had the feeling the eye was staring right back at him, could see him in the dark, and gazed with a chill and hungry, limited intelligence.
Bloodthirsty little bastards. Did you see the teeth on that one?
Shut up, Enrique. Keep moving.
The hallway closed them in more tightly, and none of them saw the tripwire. Connor's foot caught it.
Hey!
Dean struggled to maintain his balance, watching Connor fly through the air as the explosion ripped the front desk to shreds and smashed the front of the aquarium. Tons of water shot out of the broken glass wall, swamping the boys. Dean went down hard. As he tried to shove himself up to his feet, a sharp agony started in the side of his neck. He reached up to just above his collarbone, searching for the source of the pain. His fingers slid over a small, scaly body that wiggled fiercely in his hand. Dean's stomach twisted in sudden sickness at the realization of what had him by the neck. He pulled, but the teeth were clamped on tight. Blood spilled down the side of his neck, then tracked down onto his chest beneath the vest. Moxon flailed nearby. One of the carnivorous fish had fastened onto his face. Scarlet lines trailed down his cheek and across his lips. His eyes were wide, filled with fear.
Master Blader's got me, Lewis! Help me!
Holding onto the fish with one hand, Dean holstered his gun and reached for his knife. One swipe and he hacked the fish apart just behind its oversized jaws. The teeth remained embedded and fixed. Lewis crossed over to Moxon and sliced that fish off, inserting a knife blade just behind the bulging eye and twisting it. The jaws popped open, releasing Moxon's face. Lewis tossed the dying fish away. After removing the fish head from his neck, Dean sat and crawled to Green, where he lay shuddering on the floor as if he were having some kind of a fit. The boy's mouth gaped open in a silent scream. The wound in his leg released a spreading pink stain into the inch-deep water, littered with flopping fish. Dean rolled him over. He glanced down and saw three fish working at the boy's side. They'd opened a large wound just below the ribcage. Managing to grab one of the fish, Dean watched in horror as another one ate its way into Green's insides.
Oh, shit! Enrique!
Dean threw the first fish away and cut the second fish off, leaving the head. He tightened his fingers and rammed them into Green's side, tearing the flesh with the pressure he exerted. He touched the sharp fins of the fish's tail, gained almost an inch on it as he watched the ridge of flesh that showed the fish's passage inside Enrique moving across the boy's stomach. Another surge, and the fish was lost to him.
Damn, Enrique!
Dean watched helplessly as the fleshy ridge turned abruptly, crawling up to Enrique's chest. Blood gushed from the boy's mouth. The boy tried to get up, choking and heaving. Then his head relaxed, and his eyes remained open wide.
Fuck.
Dean looked up and found Perry standing only a few feet away. The rest of the boys appeared bloody but intact. Connor looked the worst, bleeding down the side of his face from a large gash across his forehead. Moxon and Handley dripped blood from various bites. Lewis put his hand on Dean's shoulder.
Dean, he's dead. Gotta go. No place for us to stay here.
He nodded. He picked up his gear and arranged it for quick access. He felt bad about leaving Green lying there. It had to be done.
Connor, you feel up to taking point again?
Don't see how you could trust me after that. Got Enrique chilled, too.
You didn't see that tripwire. Neither did the rest of us. Shit happens. All we can do is our best. I don't think you'll get any complaints from us. Can you do it?
I can try.
That's all we're asking. Ready when you are.
Connor raked his gaze around the others, looking for any last-minute changes of mind, then turned and took up his position. Dean followed reluctantly, feeling that no matter where they went in the building, none of them were safe. The convention center's underground parking garage was a maze of rusting and stripped wags. Remnants of the yellow lines that had once separated the vehicles lay along the dust-covered concrete floor, brought into sharp relief by the oil lantern Jack had stolen from farther down the hall.
Wow!
Christy looked a few feet ahead of Jack and saw the solid concrete wall that ended their tangled journey through the steel husks. They'd gone down the emergency stairs on one side of the main lobby and followed them into the garage to find it.
Doc?
I am sure this is it, Christy. Unless I am totally addled and cannot remember simple spatial and cartography skills, this building is not much of a challenge.
Doc came forward with the small notebook he'd liberated from Burnson's pack. On the sheets of paper, he'd carefully penciled in an outline of the building and the path they'd taken to get to the garage. Measurements, as close as he could approximate them by stepping off the distance, were tagged between marked arrowheads.
This section overlooks the pit edge we spotted from the upstairs window?
A moment to confirm that, please.
Doc left her briefly, sliding through the rows of overturned cars. Sentient hair at the back of Christie's neck coiled defensively. She turned, looking at Burnson, who'd crept considerably closer while she'd presented her back to him. She rested her hand on her pistol.
Don't even think about it. I'd kill you before you could touch me.
I wasn't doing anything.
Burnson tried to radiate harmlessness, but his shoulders dropped in dejection. He stuck out his lower lip and backed off a couple of feet. Doc returned a moment later.
This is definitely the location, dear lady.
Christy approached the wall Doc had indicated and looked at the cinder blocks it was made of. Some of the mortar had cracked and worn away in places. Hunks and bits of it snapped and popped under her boots as she ran a hand along its surface to get a feel for it.
Won't take much. Little plastics probably make big hole.
I think you're right. Let's get to it.
Jack unhooked his backpack and started rummaging through its contents for the blocks of explosive. He handed them to Christy, who kneaded the Plasex slightly before pushing it against the rough, uneven surface of the wall. When she had enough little balls in place, she stabbed a remote detonator into each. They blocked out a circular patch of the wall they'd chosen.
You sure Ryan inside now?
Yes, I feel him. I can track that.
Dean there?
Him too.
Where?
I don't know, Jack. I just know they're close.
You're confusing in the dark. Could be trouble seeing each other.
I know. Damn it, I know.
She inserted the last detonator, then walked back to the nearest empty wag.
Sorry. Stupid me. You'd already thought of that.
Christy studied the wag. In the past, someone had taken the engine and transmission, stripping other parts out of the inside. The tires were flat, but at least they were there.
Give me a hand. Let's see if we can move it.
She grabbed the steering wheel and braced against the car window, while the teenager slipped in behind the wag. Grudgingly, the vehicle started to move. It took a lot of work to put the wag in front of the area they'd mined with the Plasex.
Once they had it there, Christy looked at the space, figuring it would only take one more wag, and at most two more, to block the brunt of the blasts against the wall. That way, the explosion would be concentrated, hopefully opening up the wall. If it didn't, escape would be even more difficult. Ryan reached down and gave JB a hand up into the window on the second floor of the Mirage. Mildred and the others were already behind him, lined up on both sides of the door. The room had once been a storage area of some type. Racks that held barren clothes hangers shared space with cabinets, display counters, and shelves. Wandle, Tyler, and Owen guarded the door, anxiously peering into the darkened hallway. The echoes of the explosion had died away less than 2 minutes earlier. JB slithered in over the sill.
Saw a green light a minute ago.
One of the boys is dead.
Looks that way.
Huh. All the green team was inside the building. Means they've got a way of seeing through the walls.
Unless they've got the window staked out. Maybe a sec man just looked in and saw the boy down.
And confirmed him dead? They've got buildings open all over the pit. Hadn't thought about it before, but they'd probably want a way to check on anybody inside them.
Haven't seen any vid equipment. Starlight scopes would take away the night, but they wouldn't allow the sec guards to see through the walls. Something else might, though. Oh, shit. Thermographic sights. They register body heat if things between them aren't too dense, or don't carry too much of a heat signature themselves. A Baron would have to have serious jacks to afford that kind of equipment. It's hard to find.
I sure don't like the idea of the sec guards being able to spy on us at any time. What about a heat signature?
Man, we're sitting duck standing in one place like this. That explosion? You know them green team guys aren't going to stay put. They'll be moving. And with them moving, they're liable to run smack into us.
Owen, with us moving, there's no less risk.
Moving around some would just feel better.
When the time comes to move, I'll let you know.
Owen's gaze burned for just a moment. Then he looked back into the hallway.
Heat signature of the human body is 98.6. Nothing else around us burns that hot.
But if we got a good blaze going somewhere...
Yeah, it'd blind the sec men's sights for a while. But when we moved from the fire, they'd find us again.
It would buy us some time, though.
Sure.
Good to know. There'll come a time we may need to buy a few minutes.
Drawing the Sig Sauer, Ryan started for the hallway. The skin across his neck and shoulders drew tight. It wasn't pleasant thinking about the boys roaming around inside the building with them. They were killers. They'd proved their ability. If it came to it, he'd put them down and walk over their bodies without a second thought, if it would put him one step closer to his freedom. Peering through the thermographic sniper sights, Hayden Lamarck saw the human-shaped heat signatures of the green team walk away from the dying ember of the team member they'd left behind in the Mirage entrance. The dozens of muti piranha that had splashed across the floor after the explosion glowed steadily brighter as their body temperature escalated. Some of them still flopped weakly.
Confirmed kill on one of the green team, Baron Hardco. His body temp's dropping.
The green team is inside the building?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Wallace.
Sir?
Get a message to tell Phoebes to let the creatures go.
Yes, sir.
Thorogood left, moving quickly. Hardco looked at Conrad and smiled slowly as the other Baron slid a green bead over.
It appears good fortune has turned the other cheek on you.
One death. You've suffered four.
Oh, not as many as young Francis's team.
Francis Giscard made a mock woeful face, then reached for a fresh drink.
What is it you sent your man for?
You're familiar with Phoebes?
Calls himself a physician. A worse joke was never made.
He is somewhat coarse and ill-tempered.
The man is sick and perverted.
Detweiler leaned forward and frowned.
Wasn't he the man who tried to bring life back into corpses, create some kind of army of the undead?
Yes, he was partially successful, from what I was told.
Nonsense. Phoebes is a genius.
Forget that. What is he loosing into the pit?
Oh, in his travels in recent days, he came across an interesting strain of monkeys created before the sky dark, from somewhere along the upper Pacific coastline.
Monkeys? As a Baron, you have a right to include whatever traps you deem necessary in the pit. But how the hell can you expect monkeys to be a threat to armed men?
They're mutated. Just like the big cats we found roaming around here.
In what way?
I didn't know this at the time, but most primates are carnivorous to a degree.
Primates?
Any kind of monkey or ape. These are meat eaters by choice. For the last 7 months, Thebes has been working with them here, feeding them, making them angry and fearful, starving them sometimes until they almost went insane. Twice they started fighting among themselves, killing four or five of the weaker ones and devouring them. Over the years, Phoebe said they've been inbred until insanity is less than a stone's throw away from them. For the last 2 months, the monkeys have had a constant feeding area.
The Mirage.
Yeah, exactly. They haven't been fed in the last 4 days and have been secured in a soundproof room near the top of the Mirage. Phoebe has an electronic door opener. Those monkeys have been released into that building by now.
They're still just monkeys. Not much threat in that.
I seem to recall that you weren't impressed with the piranha in the fish tank at the Mirage's entry. One of Conrad's prize team members is now dead because of it.
Only one.
True. But now that team is running scared. They thought to take the high ground as other teams before them had planned on. Only now they're not as safe as they believed they were going to be. Those monkeys are meat-eaters, as I said. But they're also little more than a foot and a half tall. Much stronger and faster than they appear. Oh, and they have wings.
Winged monkeys? Can they fly?
Well, not fly. However, they can glide pretty damn well. I've seen them do it. Something new, eh, Conrad? That's what we wanted for the pit. And no matter how well drilled those boys you managed to gather up are, there's no way they could have prepared for this.
Conrad didn't say anything. He just lifted his binoculars, frowning. Lamarck raised the thermographic lenses to his eyes again, scanning the topmost floors of the Mirage. In a matter of moments, he managed to locate the monkeys, dimly outlined by their shape as they scuttled across the floor. They were a horde, their body temperatures considerably elevated from a human's. The monkeys moved quickly, seeking out the empty elevator shafts and sliding down between the levels to the bottom floor. Some of them unfurled wings, almost twice as broad as they were tall, and glided down, bouncing off the walls.
You've never said how many monkeys there were.
Dozens. The Green Team won't get out of that building alive. I'm afraid, Vinge, that your seasoned troops, with their training and their intent to take the high ground, are going to find that those tactics have ultimately chilled all of them.
Getting down to the nut cutting, it's only going to matter who's the best chillers, just like it always has.
A man who's a believer until the bitter end. Very good of you, Vinge.
Lamarck moved the thermographic lenses around, picking up other hot spots. The Green Team appeared the only ones who could give the one-eyed man at his party any serious competition. Abruptly, he ran the lenses across a heat signature that read human. He brought the lenses back slowly, finding what he was looking for on the second floor. He leaned down to Hardko's ear.
Sir, our team is in the building as well.
Where?
Second floor.
Well, if they've got the sense we've given them credit for, as soon as they hear the monkeys take the Green Team, they'll leave the building.
Christy put the last plastics charge in place against the ceiling. On the top floor now, she knew the SecMen were only a few feet above her. The only thing separating her from them were the crawl space, ceiling, roof, and whatever ductwork was in place.
Done, Jack.
Jack stepped out of the shadows beside the room's door. Together, they went down the emergency stairs in a matter of minutes, returning to the first floor. Doc remained in the underground garage with Burnson, who'd become increasingly nervous as he figured out what Christy and the others were planning to do. The man might become a problem. In Ryan's place, Christy thought she might have killed the scientist then and there to protect the other companions. They owed Burnson nothing. The man had even tried to kill them. But she wasn't Ryan. So she'd taken the chance that Doc could handle the man. On the first floor, they went through the double doors leading out into the main hall. Another two turns put them into a large meeting area. Rusted metal folding chairs were thrown haphazardly about, partially buried by the chunks of ceiling that had fallen over the decades. They stopped at one of the large plate glass windows overlooking the pit area. Looking through the glass, Christy saw intermittent gunfire flash yellow and white against the foliage and the neon burn spots.
Ready?
Christie's power tweaked suddenly, and the sense of imminent danger for Ryan suddenly increased.
We need to go.
Jack moved to the window. He'd loosened it earlier, working the dried putty from the framework with a knife. He licked his hands, then rubbed them against each other. The glass was a 3-foot by 4-foot rectangle. Jack placed his hands against it, using the friction of his moistened palms to draw the window back and prevent it from falling from his grasp when he drew it into the room. Christie caught the edge of the glass and helped him put it against the wall on the floor. Jack shook loose a length of climbing rope with a small grapple already attached. He hooked it to the window's lip, then threw the rope outside. When there was no immediate gunfire in response, he clambered out after it.
Go, I'll be right behind you.
Jack slowly slid down to the ground, 40 feet below. He looped the rope around his waist, bracing it for her descent.
Gaia, protect us.
Christie climbed out of the window and slid down into the waiting death arena. The rope burned her hands, and she bit her lip to endure the pain. Seconds later, her boots hit the ground. There was no choice but to leave the rope where it was and hope it wouldn't be spotted. If it was found later, it would be too late to matter, she hoped. Jack turned and took the lead. Christie followed, drawing her weapon. She worried about the bare places between the buildings, the forested areas, and the wall. Care had been taken to keep them separated. Trusting Jack's woodcraft skills and her own persistent beauty powers to put her on the path to Ryan, they moved as swiftly as they could. Dean and the boys turned together, bringing up their weapons. Dean's eyes burned, trying to sort out the shadows from reality over the sights of the Browning high power. Several shadows were in motion, though. He peered at them intently as they approached. Bobby Handley grinned.
Monkeys! Just a bunch of monkeys! No reason to be scared!
As the shadows went away and the moonlight leaking through the building fell across the monkeys, Dean saw that they weren't ordinary beasts of their kind. These monkeys looked leaner, their legs more proportioned with their arms and upper bodies. Their heads, however, were half again as large as they needed to be, and they were filled with teeth and bright, burning eyes. The lower jaws held more teeth than usual, and the bottom canines thrust belligerently upward, curving dangerously, fangs that almost reached the eyes. At first, Dean thought the monkeys were humpbacked. A moment later, he saw that the abnormality on the creatures' backs was folded wings. Lewis stepped forward, dropping his rifle into position.
Monkeys or not, fuckers might be dangerous. Wouldn't put it past the people running this show to infect them with rabies.
He fired a couple feet in front of the advancing wave of monkeys. Instead of retreating or coming to a stop, the monkeys instantly went on the attack. Some of them leapt into the air like ungainly birds, the wings flapping hard enough to crack the air.
Shit! Chill them!
Moxon's weapon was already up and firing. Dean joined in, trying to pick his targets to make sure of the kill. The monkeys were too densely packed to miss, but the attempt to hold the line was over in seconds. The monkeys came on too fiercely, none of them appearing to be frightened by the gunfire exploding around them. Dean backed away, the Browning slide blowing back empty. He changed magazines, ducking under the gliding attack of one of the creatures. The fierce jaws snapped closed only inches from his left eye, hot drool splashing against his cheek.
Run! Break off and try to find a place to hold up!
Dean fought his way free of the clutches of three monkeys who'd seized his legs. To his right, he saw Moxon go down under at least a half dozen of them. Dean started forward, wondering how he was going to help the other boy. Abruptly, Moxon's body quivered, then relaxed. When it started to move again, it was due to the monkeys piled on top of him, stripping the flesh from his bones and bloody gobbets. Dean turned and ran, finding he was nearly the last of them to move out. The monkeys raced after them, at a disadvantage because of their shorter legs, but the disadvantage wasn't much.
Outside! We stand a better chance outside, Lewis!
No way! We get outside in the open, these bastards can chew us to bits in no time! Ah!
Without warning, something clipped Dean's shoulder and nearly toppled him from his feet. He managed to maintain his balance and watched in horror as a group of the winged monkeys flew into the boys. Four of them landed on Handley, knocking the boy forward into the ground, blood covering his features immediately. The monkeys clawed his back and buttocks, tearing through the clothing to get at his flesh. Dean brought up the Browning, so scared he had to fight to keep moving. Lewis grabbed Dean by the arm and hauled him away.
Forget him!
This hallway's smaller. Maybe we can cut down the number that come at us.
Dean couldn't even recognize the voices. He got himself organized and started to match Lewis's pace, not wanting to slow the boy and get them both killed. The hallway ended abruptly. Dean stared at the wooden door ahead of them. The plaque, its white letters barely visible against the black in the shadows, read Gentleman.
Bathroom!
Go through it. We got no choice.
Looking back, Dean saw the monkeys approaching them, some of the muty animals unfurling their wings to launch into a glide. He fumbled for the door and got it open. Lewis followed him inside. The only light falling into the room came from the weak illumination reflected from the hallway. Once Lewis shut and bolted the door, even that went away. Wallace Thorogood ran into the Baron's viewing room, straight to Lamarck.
We got intruders inside the pit.
Who?
Don't know. They came through the window of the old convention center. Slid down a rope and a hauling ass.
Conrad looked at one of his sec commanders.
Get word out to the wall guards. Tell them I want those people killed.
Wallace, the same goes for our guards. Go with him.
The men nodded and rushed out of the room. Lamarck felt the tension in the room suddenly increase as all the barons leaned forward with their glasses in hand. He knew they were all thinking the same thing. If any of the barons had been behind the insertion of extra troops, that baron was a dead man. Lamarck trained his glasses on the wall by the convention center and spotted the rope immediately. Then he picked up the thermographic lenses and began to search for the intruders. In seconds, he had their heat signatures. Neither of them showed the special ID buttons that were in the body armor of the team members. He grew cold inside because he figured he knew who the intruders were, and there was no way Hardco wouldn't be blamed for it. Death hovered over the room, waiting to be released. He dropped his hands to his Glock. Ryan halted along the stairwell that led from the second floor to the first and listened. Weak light dribbled in from the mesh windows in the doors to the emergency stairs.
Not after us.
Ryan eased forward with Sig Sauer at the ready. He peered through the scarred metal-ribbed glass, feeling the armorer's breath light against the back of his neck. The light was better outside. Scanning the scene before him, Ryan felt his hackles lift. Four of the green team were down, scattered along a couple corridors, and almost buried under dozens of creatures that looked like things from a Matran's nightmare.
Dark Knight!
Get back before these bastards get our scent.
He signaled to Owen and Mildred, backing the group up the stairs. Just as they started up the second set of steps, something smashed into the emergency door below. At the tail of the line, Ryan peered back at the door. A monkey's face almost filled the rectangle. Then two others popped into view, shoving the first beast away.
Move! They're onto us!
The door trembled in the frame as the knob turned slowly.
Bastards can work the knobs!
Ryan sighted along the length of the Sig Sauer, then put two rounds into the monkey's face. The bullets left holes in the glass, one of them snipping through the wire mesh. More monkeys suddenly clawed at the door. One of Conrad's sec men raced into the Baron's viewing room.
The intruders are heading for the Mirage.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Detweiler pulled a gun and pointed it in Hardco and Conrad's direction.
One of you two bastards is trying to pull a fast one on us. I want to know which one it is.
Quietly and quickly, Lamarck pulled his Glock and kept it out of sight by turning his body.
You don't pull a blaster on me unless you're gonna use it.
I'll use it, all right, if I find out you're behind this.
Then you'd better be fast enough to kill me, too. Because I'll kill you right after you pull that trigger if you fuck around anymore.
Thought you and Conrad were enemies, Hardco.
Hasn't changed a bit. If I had the chance, got away from here, and I thought I could take him, maybe I'd find out if I could. But not here, and not now. The truce between us will be honored in this place. It's the only thing that keeps the peace between us. I won't see it broken by anyone.
Giscard calmly stretched out his hand with a small derringer in it. He shoved the blunt muzzle behind Detweiler's ear.
I'm more of a gambling man. I think I can pull the trigger on this little pocket cannon before you manage to squeeze through that one. Want to see? As soon as you pull the trigger, or maybe even only look like you're going to, why, maybe all the people in this room are dead men. What I suggest is a moment of reason. You pulled the first blaster. By rights, I think it should be you who first puts his away. Don't you agree?
Face contorted with anger, Detweiler complied. With a smile, Giscard lowered the Derringer's hammer. Lamarck tried to appear indifferent to the whole situation, but his heart pounded inside him.
Venge? I'll not see you make an attempt on Detweiler either. Not while we're here.
No man pulls a blaster on me and lives.
What you do away from here is none of my business. Here, I've had my say on.
What we should all be doing is taking care of those interlopers before they further interrupt the big game, and we have to declare it a null effort. Then we'll be faced with leaving things as they are until next year and playing again.
If that happens, it seems like things could turn out in your favor, Hardco.
I didn't put those people in there.
Maybe we should go find out.
Conrad turned to his nearest sec boss.
Pass the word along to those wall guards to get some people into the pit. Track those two people down. Kill them and identify them. I want their bodies brought out of there. And get some guards off the wall near the Mirage and into the building. Get some men in there with flamethrowers. I don't want any of our people hurt by those monkeys before they have a chance to put down the interlopers.
Yes, sir!
Hardco pushed himself out of his seat, his movements followed at once by Conrad.
I'm not going to stay in here and watch this. I want to be out there where I can see things for myself.
Then so do I.
Lamarck took up his position and went with them. Never before during a big game had the Barons left the security of the safe room. He didn't like the way the night was shaping up. Doc sat against the opposite wall from the one Jack and Christy had spent time salting with their explosives. He listened to the gunshots and offered a silent prayer to his maker for his friends left so unprotected and outmanned in the pit.
I don't know what you're doing with these people, Dr. Tanner. You're a man of science. Hardly their ilk at all.
Are you acquainted with the works of the bard?
William Shakespeare?
The very man.
He was no scientist.
On the contrary, I believe he indeed was. And his spheres of investigation were the vagaries of the human heart versus the morality of civilization using power as a catalyst.
Perhaps I'll look upon his works in time.
Doc wasn't fool enough to think the man was sincere. It was only an effort at placating him.
As the bard said in his work, The Tempest, misery acquaints a man with strange bedfellows. I've found that in my years to be a most apt statement.
But we have a chance to get out of here. Those people are going to get caught. In the process, they're going to get us caught as well.
You cannot know that. These people are very good at what they do. You have not seen even a fraction of the perils they've faced together during their travels.
Oh, fool's luck. You, my friend, are guilty of a most destructive false pride.
That shall remain to be seen, and I shall have a front row seat.
Dean, that lock's not going to hold them for long.
There's not going to be another way out of here either. One way in, one way out. Gotta be.
A match flared in the darkness, illuminating first Lewis's features, then spreading across the interior of the bathroom. It was a big room, perhaps the biggest of its kind that Dean had ever seen. Stalls lined the wall to his left, flanked by urinals. Shattered mirrors clung haphazardly to the tiled walls. Bugs fled across the tiled floor, retreating from skeletons that were decades old and corpses that may have only been weeks in decaying.
Up! Maybe some crawl space we can get through. Shit!
The match burned his fingers, and Lewis dropped the flaming stick to the floor. Dean hated being left blind in the darkness. His skin crawled at the sound coming from the door. Lewis struck another match, then moved into one of the stalls. He stood on the toilet and shoved one of the acoustic tiles out of the metal frame that formed the ceiling.
I think we can get through here. Hurry!
Dean hauled himself up on the toilet beside Lewis and caught the lip of the metal frame.
Oh, fucking dust!
It took a lot of strength to pull his body up inside. The floor of the next level was scarcely more than 2 feet above him.
Dean, I need help!
Reaching down, Dean caught the vest of Lewis's body armor and yanked him through. As he passed through, Lewis dropped the match to the floor.
See anything?
There wasn't time.
Another match flared into being. Perspiration dripped down Lewis's face, glowing like pearls.
Over there.
Dean looked, seeing the access shaft in front of them. He started for it immediately. Before he reached it, Lewis dropped the match. but finding the entranceway to the access shaft was no problem. Dean crawled inside and found it shifted straight up within a few feet. Lewis lit another match.
Can we make it?
I think so. Be a hard climb.
Beats the hell out of staying down here.
An instant later, brown hairy hands gripped the sides of the metal frame where Dean and Lewis had come up through.
They smell us!
Not for long. Hurry!
Lewis retrieved a Gren from his pack and pulled the pin. Turning, he lobbed the bomb back onto the acoustic tiles. Dean went up the shaft, bracing his back against the side with his palms extended in front of him, shoving his way up with his feet. Lewis was right below him. When the Gren blew, it sent a flash of light stabbing into Dean's eyes. Dean kept climbing, feeling the wave of heat pass over him. Wherever they were headed, it had to be better than where they were. Ryan was the last man through the door on the second level. Monkeys filled the landing below, their eyes glowing ruby red. He paused for a moment and fired the Sig Sauer as rapidly as he could until it was empty. Monkeys flopped backward, killed by the Full Metal Jacket rounds. He stepped back to reload, and JB stepped forward with Grens in both hands. He pulled the pins with his teeth and tossed the bombs into the stairwell. When the explosion sounded so quickly, Ryan thought for a moment that JB had miscalculated the time and blown them all to hell. Then he realized that the other explosion was farther off.
Might have discouraged them some, but they're still plenty interested.
Ryan took the lead. He sprinted down the hallway, with Mildred, JD, Owen, and Tyler close behind, past elevators with sagging doors torn from their tracks. Moonlight poured in through the windows at one end of the corridor and filtered out the set at the other end. They crossed two intersections before the monkeys came boiling out of the stairwell behind them. Taking the first left at the next intersection he came to, Ryan slapped at doors, kicking them open. The locks had been broken or shot out over the years. All of the rooms were bedrooms of some type, though the furniture had been stolen or torn to pieces. None of them offered any hope of escape.
Those were winged monkeys!
Yep. Big teeth for monkeys, though.
All we need is for a green ball of fire to drop from the ceiling and suddenly proclaim, I am the great and powerful Oz!
Ryan didn't have a clue as to what Mildred was talking about. He took a right at the next intersection, spotting the huge plate glass window at the end of the hallway. He lifted the Sig Sauer and started to fire rounds at the glass, which starred but didn't shatter.
JB, take the glass out. We'll go over the side, get back into the forest. Maybe lose ourselves. We can't hold this building.
JB lifted the S&W scattergun to his shoulder. The flechettes struck the window already weakened by Ryan's rounds and blew out nearly the whole section. Ryan stopped at the window, looking around warily for snipers posted outside. He knocked the ragged chunks of glass from the bottom track of the window with the barrel of the Sig Sauer. Mildred touched his shoulder as she came up beside him and pointed. Ryan followed her line of direction and saw two figures dashing through the forest less than a quarter mile away. He reached into his pack and took out his binoculars. Focusing them, he made out Jack and Christy just as they slipped under low tree branches. He kept tracking them until he saw them come out on the other side, only a few feet from a large pond surrounded by a raised bank. Muzzle flashes burned hot against the shadows and foliage behind them, marking the course of their pursuers.
Fire blast!
Ryan watched his lover as bullets cut through the brush around her. A dozen riders on horseback galloped toward Christy and Jack's position, circling slightly to get through the tangled brush. Ryan lifted the Sig Sauer. At that distance, the rounds weren't effective against the riders, but they did warn Jack and Christy. Two rifle rounds struck fragments from the brickwork near Ryan's head, driving him to cover. Spotting the riders, Jack and Christy turned suddenly and headed for the pond. Bullets ripped into the ground where they'd been. Tracer rounds scattered sparks in their wake. In seconds, they were gone from view.
JB, go!
The armorer hoisted himself up through the window and launched himself outward. Mildred followed, trailed by Wandel and Tyler. Ryan wheeled in the direction of the approaching monkeys. His bullets had little effect on the phalanx of hairy and winged bodies as the beast's bloodlust kept them moving. While the monkeys were still 10 feet short of the final intersection that would bring them less than 30 feet from Ryan's position at the window, two men stepped out forward wearing some sort of sec uniform. Both men carried what appeared to be homemade flamethrowers. Huge gouts of boiling black and orange liquid fire jetted from elongated tubes and flowed over the front line of monkeys. The smell of burned fur and feathers became an overpowering stench. Ryan held his fire, hoping they'd escape unnoticed while the Sekhmen were involved with the monkeys. Owen was now clambering through the broken window.
Fire!
One of the armed Sekhmen pointed at Ryan and Owen. A green armband marked him as belonging to one of the Barons. Evidently, someone was going to use the confusion to whittle down the odds on Hardco's team of warriors. Instantly, the men with the flamethrowers came around, both of them firing.
Owen, look out!
Ryan threw himself farther down the side corridor the companions hadn't traveled. Orange and black fire coursed along the wall, blistering paint and peeling paper, which started to burn a heartbeat later. Owen was caught in the window by both flaming screams. He fell from the window with flames wrapped around him. With a last look at the fire-filled window, Ryan pushed himself to his feet and raced down the corridor. There was no way he could make it through the swirling inferno.
Get him!
Ryan ran, searching for a way out of the maze, knowing there was little chance that Jack and Christy could escape from the situation they'd been in, unless JB and Mildred were able to get into position to help. Even at that, all of their lives might still become forfeit. Through his binoculars, Lamarck watched the men with flamethrowers attacking Hardco's champions. Livid, Lamarck whirled on Conrad.
Call them off, damn it!
Shut up, boy! Your team lost its immunity when they fired upon my sec guards.
Atop the tall wall overlooking the pit, Lamarck's hand dropped down to his pistol. Immediately, two of Conrad's sec men lifted their own weapons. Hardco himself stepped in front of Lamarck. He reached out and stilled his sec boss's hand. His eyes remained locked on Lamarck's.
No, not this way. Minj?
Yeah?
Say I agree with your view on that team of mine down in the pit. And say that I sit by and don't raise a hand while your Sekhmen mow them down. Let's also say that if your team joins mine and tries to win free of the pit, they're also forfeit and will be executed accordingly.
Peering over Hardco's shoulder, Lamarck saw Conrad run a big hand over his face. Satisfied that Lamarck wasn't going to move, the Baron turned to face his foe.
I said they're all so forfeit. Do you agree?
Yeah, okay.
Lamarck bit his lip. The die had been cast. Now it only remained to be seen who came up with snake eyes. The air shaft bent again another 10 feet up. Dean followed it with difficulty, aided by the adrenaline surging through his body and urged on by Lewis pushing at his heels. He crawled another 7 or 8 feet. Then his forward hand encountered a mesh screen tightly set into place.
It's blocked, and the shaft has gotten smaller. I can barely move up here.
A match flared to life, throwing slashes of illumination over Dean's shoulder. The vent in front of him was about 2 feet wide by 18 inches high. The match framed most of the rectangle on the carpeted floor on the other side of the vent. Tables and chairs were scattered across the room, joined by a few skeletons dressed in tatters. Rodents and insects scattered at the sudden illumination.
Get the damn thing out of the way! Those monkeys will be here any second!
Now that he could see what was blocking the way, Dean slipped a long-bladed hunting knife free of his belt and shoved it under the vent frame next to one of the top screws. He twisted with all his strength. The screw popped. He moved the blade to the next screw and popped it too, loosening the top of the vent.
Hurry, Dean! They're having trouble getting up the shaft, but I don't think it's going to hold them for very long.
Dean put the knife away, then rested his shoulder against the vent and put his weight into it. The match went out as the vent popped loose. It fell under the carpet below, lost in the darkness.
Shit!
Dean slithered through, falling head first. But landed hands out and somersaulted, protecting his head. He got to his feet and helped Lewis climb out of the vent and into the room.
Go!
Lewis reached out in the darkness and shoved his companion forward. Dean made his way as quickly as he could across the debris-strewn floor, nearly tripping over unidentifiable objects as he made his way to the opposite wall where he'd seen the door. A match burnt to life in Lewis's cupped palms. The boy's blonde locks were plastered to his head, his cheeks reddened by blood.
Damn door's gotta be here somewhere.
There!
Dean pointed at the door, 5 feet from their position. The first monkey dropped to the carpeted floor. Dean spun and brought up the high power. The bullets hit the monkey and bounced it backward against the wall.
Go on, I'll follow you!
Lewis didn't waste time arguing. He needed both hands to keep the match alive. Shifting his aim, Dean pumped rounds into the vent area. A couple of the large eyes winked out. Two more monkeys dropped from the vent and charged forward. A third monkey launched itself from the vent, wings spread out to catch the air.
Dean!
Turning, Dean raced for the door. Lewis held it open. Weak illumination from the hallway windows took the place of the match Lewis dropped at his feet. The boy had his pistol in hand and fired over Dean's head and shoulders. Once in the corridor, Dean helped Lewis slam the door shut. Both boys resting their weight against it. As the flying monkey slammed against it, hard enough to open it almost an inch. The monkey slid blunt, hairy fingers through the crack, angling to gain enough purchase to shove the door all the way open with its incredible strength.
Bastards!
Dean unsheathed his knife and ran it down the side of the door, neatly slicing off all five of the monkey's fingers. Blood squirted from the injured appendages as its hand disappeared back inside. Shifting his grip on the knife, Dean rammed the blade into the jamb near the top of the door. He rammed a second knife into the jamb near the bottom.
Hold him for a little while, maybe.
Lewis took the lead, trotting across the worn and stained carpet in the corridor. The open spaces were filling up with a haze of smoke, as if the building had caught fire somehow. Dean wondered where the others were, how they were doing, if they were still alive. Abruptly, two bulky shadows stepped around the corner of the intersection ahead of them, little more than 20 feet away. Then Dean noticed the wavering fires captured in the barrels of the misshapen pistols they carried in their gloved hands. Hoses curled from the weapons and around the men's legs.
Shit! Run!
Lewis backpedaled at once and streaked for the other end of the corridor. He bumped against Dean, pushing him back in that direction as well. Dean ran as hard as he could, understanding now where all the smoke had come from. He glanced over his shoulder and spotted the sudden mushrooms of orange and black flames suddenly gushing from the spouts of the flamethrowers. A partially open door ahead of them, only a couple steps on the left, caught Dean's attention. He slammed into Lewis, knocking them both through the door as the boiling fire rushed through the corridor, filling it. The two boys fell to the floor. Gazing around the empty boxes on the neatly depleted storage racks, the stainless steel gleaming in the sudden glare of the flames, Dean realized there was no other way out of the room.
Back out, it's the only way!
They got to their feet and poised by the door, checking their weapons as they waited for the flames to die down. When the flamethrowers ceased spitting fire, Lewis took the lead around the doorway, breaking into a sprint at once across the corridor carpet. Fire pockets blazed on the walls and on the floor, some of them clinging precariously to the acoustic tile overhead. Dean raced after the other boy, sweating profusely, more scared now than at any time that he could ever remember. The corner of the next intersection was 15 feet away. Lewis staggered abruptly, almost losing a step. Blood spread in a widening pattern below the armored vest on his left side, just above his hip. As they turned the corner, Dean saw the other boy was definitely losing his stride. Lewis held his side. His face was white with pain.
Go on, Dean. I can't run much farther. Maybe I can give you some more time.
No! We're gonna get out of this together!
Dean hooked the boy's arm over his shoulders. Taking part of Lewis's weight, he guided the boy toward a door on the left. Inside, the walls had been stripped to concrete. The low ceiling held broken conduit pipes and shattered fluorescent tubes. Overturned tables were in the center of the room, broken chairs all around them. They were metal and wouldn't burn, which was the only reason Dean could figure they hadn't been taken. It looked like a private gaming room for small groups.
Stay in here. Try to find some place to hide. I'll see if I can't get them away from us.
Lewis nodded, leaning against the back wall. Blood streamed out the side of his mouth. Wordlessly, he offered Dean his rifle, his handgun still in his other hand.
I'll be back. I promise. Just hold on.
Slinging the rifle, he sprinted back out of the room and into the hallway. He heard the footsteps coming up the hallway they'd just turned off.
Shot one of the sons of bitches. No, I did. Saw him stagger when the bullet took him.
If he did, we'll find him soon enough.
In the distance, Dean saw another intersection. With luck, the Sekhmen would think he and Lewis had made it that far. Instead of racing in that direction, he holstered the Browning, then ran a few short steps and jumped from one of the metal crossbars in the ceiling overhead. A number of the acoustic tiles were missing, making a checkerboard of the ceiling. Scrambling quickly, Dean hauled himself up into the darkness and lay along the crawl space. He positioned himself so he could see down into the corridor, then slipped the assault rifle over his shoulder and snapped the safety off. He pushed the selector to full auto, snugged the rifle into his shoulder the way his dad and JB had taught him, and waited. The Sectine prowled below. The Ying held perfectly still, not wanting to be a moving shadow above them. He'd gambled everything, his life and Lewis's, on the play that was about to go down.
Must not have been hurt as bad as you thought. Fuckers have already made the next corner.
Dean watched them come into view. He slid his finger over the rifle trigger, taking up slack. When the men came into view, staggered out a little across the corridor, he dropped the rifle's open sights over the flamethrower tank on the back of the man on the left. Wet orange flames jetted everywhere from the explosion, curling against the windows on the opposite wall and filling them with a layer of soot. The men writhed in agony until their lives ran out. Lamarck watched as the sudden flare of the propellant washed away the image of the Green Team member who'd gunned down the Sec guards. He dropped the binoculars and glared at Conrad, whose face seemed to be carved of stone.
They're forfeit.
Kill them! Kill them all!
Around them, the Sec man rushed toward the rope ladders that would allow them to get into the pit. Death was coming. And this time, Lamarck didn't think even the one-eyed man could escape.